chief. The chief. you've got the chief financial officer, the chief executive officer, and the chairperson. They all start with a C, the title, which is very good. We'll give to the chair to later on introduce himself properly and the team that is accompanying him. But I must take this opportunity to congratulate my political head, our political head of this committee, Comrade Doris Nengwane, who the ANC has officially deployed as the whip of this committee. I think we must just welcome and give the comrade a round of applause here. You see, the pressure on the chair is not that much. If you've got a political commissar here, then, the rest becomes a job. But thanks, Sissy, and congratulations. Brad, I think those congratulations are in order, isn't it? Yeah. Now, just in terms of just a few housekeeping matters, members, you recall that we're meeting the IDT this afternoon. We meeting them at 3:15. Now, there is a dilemma here, which is a small one. I'm suggesting because there is some international guest who's coming to see the African National Congress in particular. It's the daughter of Che Guevara. Okay? I'm sure I don't have to get into the details.
You can go on.
I don't know if other parties have taken advantage of my presence in Parliament today, but just to give us a briefing for a few minutes about what's happening around Cuba and other areas. It's a matter that we can't put an opportunity that we don't want to miss, and we would humbly request for the indulgence of other colleagues, so that maybe we can start our meeting at 4 rather than 3:15. It's just a request that I'm making, with your understanding and permission, so that we kill all these birds. We've got an option to meet. We're supposed to meet them at 3:15 today, or we meet them tomorrow morning. I would request that we don't extend it to tomorrow. Let's finish it today. I take it that you've gone through their report. There is no, in my view, no drama there. Just the issues, strategic issues, and other matters that members are worried about that we've got to raise with the IDT. So I'm going to look for some feedback before I continue on that score. The second matter that I want to raise is about the strategic workshop. Over the strategic plan workshop taking place starting on Friday. I did indicate to you that if the apology list goes beyond 2, then we're going to postpone. We do exactly that. We've had 2 more apologies. We had an apology from Ms. Nengwane, the whip of the committee. We had an apology, not an apology, actually. Somebody was just saying he was going to abscond. We did not accept that apology, but he was going to go anyway. So we were prepared to keep it at that. Now we've got Baba Manana, who's abroad as well. Yeah, so we're dwindling. If we have this workshop, we must have the majority of members there. Comrade Becky Hadebe has also been deployed as a whip in trade and industry. We're just debating and negotiating that he remains an alternate member, but go and do the necessary political work there as well. So that makes our numbers doubtful. So we have to shift. We've already applied for cancellation, so it's not a matter that I think we are going to negotiate here now. The warning was given before, but also we've engaged with the NCOP on this matter. The chair of the NCOP, who also happens to be away this week, is in Mozambique. I think the election's taking place. He's gone there as an observer. But we've extended the invitation to the NCOP component, also to be able to share with them as colleagues on the matter relating to public works. I think if we appreciate the enormity of the challenge ahead of us, we must ensure that in the one next one that is planned, I think we'll consult before we put a date. We try to be there, all of us, except if there is some issues that we hadn't planned for, so that we take this matter seriously. We also did invite the minister, by the way, to spend about an hour with us in the beginning, whatever, just to give us his perspective as well in terms of his department. He initially agreed, but he later came to say the CIDB is having a stakeholders forum as well on the same date. So he was torn between the two. Now with this, I think we'll also invite him into the next one if he's available. But it doesn't mean that if he's not there, we can't continue. We are going to continue anyway, at the date that we would have agreed upon. Those are housekeeping matters. If there are any comments, I'll allow for that. Otherwise, members, in terms of the matter at hand, you are given two documents that we are going to deal with. The other one is the strategic plan that is going to be presented, quite a thick document. This one, you've gone through a strategic plan before, so I don't expect that we'll spend too much time on it. But obviously, because you were given this document before, you are taking it, you've gone through it. And the annual report, which deals with the finances and all other things related. So that's when I'll be giving it to the chair. Before I give you, let me just check our housekeeping matters, if they are in order. Makaban, can I, colleagues, Gadeli?
No, I wanted to say I'm not sure if we'll ever have a weekend like every day. So maybe you might have
anybody else? No one else? Hey?
Another tsunami.
The person I just
wanted to find out, I don't have a problem with waiting until you guys come out. But is there something compelling for tomorrow not to have the IDT tomorrow?
Yes and no. We're trying not to take you out of your other committee meetings, because we did apply provisionally for a special permission, you see. But that is one. And two, the venues are clustered when it comes to morning meetings. So we're trying to say, listen, what is 30 minutes, 45 minutes amongst colleagues? So, unless you've got a major political objection, then we can just get permission for our colleagues, for our comrades, not to go there and come here. Now, give me an endorsement, Dalmasa, for 4 o'clock.
Yeah, no, I'll make it.
You're not making it with enthusiasm and force. You just make.
I'll make it, sir.
Thank you very much. Nalera Butat. He grinned.
I'm not acting that.
Baba Gail. Ishab. Yeah. Okay. No, sir, thank you very much. The workshop issue, I don't want to commit to a date now. Can we come back to you on this one? Can we just consult properly and then come back to you on this one? All right. Slug, you know the drill. You've been here before. You press and introduce yourself, introduce your team, and tell us. This is your meeting. You could come before to tell us how you spend the public money or your money. You see, and so on, and your way forward.
Honorable Chair and Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, we appreciate the opportunity to present to you today our strategic plan, business plan, and budget, and in addition, our annual report. We would like to commence with the strategic plan so that we can create a context. But we do know that we've given both documents to you, and we know that you would like to hear from us about both this strategic plan as well as the annual report. Honorable members, we come to you having firstly had a very good year last year, though with its challenges.
Sorry,
I'm sorry, I needed to introduce. I apologize to you. I'm here with two of my colleagues. The Mr. Ronnie Koza is the Chief Executive Officer of the CIDB, and Mr. Peter Mugonyane is the Chief Finance Officer of the CIDB. My name is Raymond Nkado, and I'm the Chairperson of the Board. Right. Last year we had a clean audit from the Auditor General. This year we have a qualified audit, and we'll talk to that. We also recognize the challenges that we face as CIDB, and some of the concerns that have been expressed by members of the public and members of the Parliament to us about our role, our impact on society, and our presentation will touch on those aspects. We will then welcome your questions and comments afterwards. I would like now to pass the baton to the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Ronnie Koza, to take us through the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. As it has been indicated, we have two sets of presentations. Because we haven't had an opportunity formally to present to you about the CIDB business, we'll actually try and contextualize the business so that when we talk about other issues later, it would be based on an element of common understanding. The presentation content I have quite a number of slides. Because we had forwarded the document to you, I would request that I only deal with critical information unless you actually advise us that we should go through slides that we may actually skip. We'd like to deal with the overview of the CIDB in terms of the legislative framework and mandate. We will not go into the new vision of the CIDB, the mission and strategy, but the document actually captures that. The external context for 2009-2010, the internal context, the reason why we normally deal with these is that the external context may actually be a challenge to the resources of the CIDB and how we actually structure it. So we would like to just deal with that, and then the strategic objectives, then the operational plan, key focus for 2009-2010, performance measurement. There we just have an example of how we capture performance measurement, and then I would then allow the CFO to deal with the budget at that stage. Starting with the legislative framework and mandate of the CIDB, as you may know, the CIDB was established by an Act of Parliament, Act 38 of 2000, and the mandate can be summarized in terms of two pillars, although there are many objects of the Act, but we can summarize it in two pillars. The first one is to provide strategic leadership to industry stakeholders to stimulate sustainable growth, reform, and development. And that word development within the CIDB is in the context of a development framework within which other stakeholders may then play a role. The second one is to regulate the construction industry. And I would like us to keep remembering these two pillars, because when we talk about this distilled mandate later on, we may have to contextualize that. The first board and CEO of CREP were appointed in November 2001. The first regulations were gazetted in 2004, and the standard for uniformity, the register of contractors, and the register of projects were actually rolled out in that year, starting in Limpopo with a pilot that ended up in Etiwini Metro early in 2005. If we can look at this as a distilled mandate of the CREP, is to provide strategic leadership and an enabling regulatory and development framework for a total construction delivery capability to achieve South Africa's economic and social growth, sustainable growth and empowerment of the historically disadvantaged, and then global standards of performance and value to clients and society. I'd like to emphasize the fact that when we talk about the development framework, it is actually the development framework, because the CREP at this stage or up to now has not had the capacity to deal with it in any other way. But as we are consulting with stakeholders, we get advice as to which strategic areas we should actually get involved in, and we do that. We have been amending our regulations almost every year to make sure that we respond to the requests by stakeholders, other contractors or clients, as well as other stakeholders, and all the amendments were actually implemented in line of that kind of support. From this explanation of the mandate, you can see clearly that there is a dual responsibility of the CREP, which has been happening up to now. How things must happen going forward, we'll engage with stakeholders and get advice. The first one is that we're acting as an enabler or a developer, which has been work in progress, starting from the very first day that the regulations of the CREP were actually gazetted. The second one is that we need to now act more as a regulator and enforce compliance. The CREP requirements were supposed to be complied with from 2005 for national and provincial departments, as well as state-owned entities that are involved in infrastructure development. In 2006, it was a turn for the municipalities, including the metros. So it is expected that by this time, compliance should not be a problem where certain clients are not aware of how they should comply with the CREP requirements. So I'm saying these two roles may be seen to be clashing, because we may be seen to be both a referee and a player, but it has actually assisted the industry to make sure that as we begin to enforce compliance, we then feel that we've actually assisted in terms of development. But the environment changes all the time. There are challenges around development. There are challenges around enforcement of compliance, as we may discuss later on. I would like to just highlight this one. The CREP Act mandates the CREP to establish and maintain a national register of contractors. A national register should facilitate public sector procurement, delivery, and risk management. So we use it as a risk management, macro risk management tool. It supports contractor development, and we'll talk about the National Contractor Development Program, the framework, later on. It promotes better performance, improved quality, safety, health, and environment, which is part of the phase two of the registers, which our Act requires by now that we should implement. It also categorizes the contractors in accordance with their capability and not capacity, because the clients must come and check if the contractor has capacity each time they get appointed on a project. And I'm emphasizing the word capability because some contractors are very good. They will actually go out and market themselves and end up with 10 projects. And what we assess is not that they'll be able to do 10 projects, but the fact that they can do one project. They have that capability within their companies. Just want to highlight the benefits of the Register of Contractors. Obviously, it supports risk management in the tendering process and reduces the administrative burden. If I may just illustrate, when we started in Limpopo, the Department of Public Works would issue out a tender and have say 200 respondents. When we started with the piloting of the CRDP requirements, they would end up with only those people that could do the job, and they ended up with maybe 20 respondents. So it was easy to actually fast-track the administration of the adjudication process, I mean to say. And also to facilitate sustainable growth and transformation is one of the benefits to actually enable effective access by the emerging sector. All the information is there. The emerging sector can decide where they can participate and decide where they are not able to participate so that they can plan accordingly. Contractors spend a lot of time responding to tender documents, sometimes actually not winning any tender. They can now decide that if it is at this level, I can actually do the work, so I'll tender only for these projects, minimizing their own tendering costs. It enables access by the private sector, although at this stage the CRDP does not regulate the private sector as such, except for one area, that is the registration of projects, which we're not dealing with here. The private sector is actually allowed to use our register. The mining sector specifically has actually started using our register. It provides information on the size, distribution, nature, and development of contractors. The National Contractor Development Program that has been established by CREP together with the Department of Public Works is actually beginning to point out where development must take place, the distribution of projects, the nature and development of contractors could actually be highlighted. Although I don't have the slides for that to present today, which I do have the slides on the system for those members who would like to see how that is structured, we can actually show that to you. And also to improve the performance of contractors. The performance of contractors is actually a cornerstone of their development. As they develop and they perform, they come back to the CRDP with the client being happy with the work that they've done. They'll come back to the CRDP at any time and apply for an upgrade, and they would actually be upgraded if the documents they supply are actually compliant. The CRDP Act also mandates us to establish and maintain the National Register of Projects. This time, it is maintained through the fees that should be paid by the client. The Register of Contractors is maintained through the fees that are paid by contractors. This register would gather information on the nature, value, and distribution of projects. When you want to see how development is happening in South Africa, where money is being spent, you should be able to go to this register and see where development is taking place so that government can then reprioritize where money should be spent. It provides the basis for a best practice project assessment scheme, which we are ready to pilot at this stage. There are two best practice schemes. One is the best practice contractor recognition scheme, where we'd be assisted by clients to say this contractor has performed well on this project, the quality was good, and the project was completed in time, and then we need to recognize them. The second one is the best practice project assessment scheme, which where we'd work with the clients to make sure that the projects are actually conducted in such a manner that we take care of health and safety issues. The environmental impact has actually been assessed and complied with. This will promote the performance of public and private sector clients. But I must emphasize at this stage that private sector is not part of our requirements. This is just the vision that was created starting from 2007 in November, and it has been taken through all staff, and it has been launched during the course of last year. And therefore, whatever we do is actually structured according to this vision. It says Vision 2012 and beyond because we believe that we can achieve this by 2012, but we believe that this will guide us going forward beyond 2012. The mission, I won't go into it, except to say that we are focusing on the SMMEs. If you look at the big contractors, they have capacity, they can do things, they have educated people that can assist them in this respect. But SMMEs need the support of all other role players, and CREP has decided to focus on them. The National Contractor Development Program is one tool that we use specifically in that area. In terms of the external context, you may remember that the construction industry has experienced a boom over the last few years. And until about middle of last year, and more so towards the end of last year and this year, we've had a number of challenges, but the construction industry has continued to perform very well, supported by both the private sector to some extent, but specifically supported by government to make sure that there were very strategic projects, multi-year projects that amount to billions of rands, and that has actually sustained the South African economy based on this sector. In terms of our supporting interventions, we have infrastructure delivery skills that we need to deal with. We have shortage of skills that affect not only the private sector or the contractors only, but within the public sector, we are short of people that can manage projects for government. And this is worse in the case of municipalities. As you know, there are various interventions to actually try and assist in this way, in terms of this intervention. It is a serious challenge because we also need to look at the education, starting from secondary education, go through universities, make sure that those that were previously disadvantaged are now given an opportunity to acquire degrees and get professionally registered. It seems to be a slow process, but I'm sure that working with all different stakeholders, including the department of, or the two departments of education, basic education as well as higher education, we should be able to solve this problem going forward. Public sector delivery is a serious concern. We may have the best engineers in the country, but if they cannot align planning and the technical skills to design things, we found that it would not actually help. We have a program that is run by the Department of Public Works, CIDP, DBSA, as well as National Treasury, called IDIP, Infrastructure Development Improvement Program, where we are indicating to engineers in the provinces that they need to start aligning the planning cycle with the budget cycle to make sure that the delivery of our projects happens, and this has already made impact. Stakeholder analysis and management, we continuously analyze stakeholders and try and manage the relationships that we have with them. There is a provision in the Act that the CRDP must be reviewed by an independent panel of reviewers at least once every 5 years. At the beginning of 2007, it was at the end of January, beginning of February, that this was done for the first time for the CRDP, and specific recommendations were actually put forward. The CRDP was commended for its performance up to that time, and there were specific recommendations which were implementing all the time. Internal context. The internal context is within CRDP what is happening in response to what is happening in the industry, which was the external context that we are talking about. The operation and growth of the Register of Contractors has happened as a result of the boom in the construction industry, everybody getting attracted to the construction industry because they feel that that is where the opportunities are. There is both people who have expertise in the construction industry and those people that feel they may be retrenched elsewhere. With the unfortunate unemployment rate in South Africa, people feel that perhaps this is the opportunity for them. The CRDP needs to specialize. We are a knowledge-based organization. We need people who work for the CRDP to do most of the work and only use consultants in very specific areas where we would not have the capacity in that area of specialization. And we manage that all the time. Risk exposure. As an organization, the CRDP is exposed to various risks. We have a risk committee that has been appointed, taking responsibility out of the audit committee because we believe that we need to focus in that direction and prioritize risk management. It's a newly appointed risk committee that is composed of some board members, senior management, and a member of the audit committee, external member that is, as well as a person who has been appointed to assist us in this direction. But we've always looked at risk management from the risk committee's point of view. We now have a specific board committee to deal with that. Business systems, we've been working with hard copies that has challenged us in terms of storage. We have decided now to prioritize what we call EDMS, Electronic Document Management System, to make sure that when documents are received, we scan them, we keep them. That will assist us in terms of preventing fraud, but also making sure that the documents can be accessed around the country. It doesn't matter that an office in Cape Town, an office in Bishop would like to access them. At this stage, they cannot actually access the documents themselves. They just have access to information that has been captured on the system. CRS stands for Construction Registers Service. That is the registers department that houses all the active registers at the CRDB. The software was designed to handle up to 100 contractors. We currently have We currently sit with more than 100,000 registrations, which is a challenge for the CRDB because we expected that around this time we'd have between about 10,000 and 12,000 registered contractors, and we're currently sitting with more than 72,000 actual contractors, and again, active registrations amount to about 95,000 at this stage. The slides that we'll present to you show 92,000. Therefore, this has put strain on our systems and human resources, but we don't want to just throw money at the problem or throw people at the problem. We need to make sure that we maintain a critical balance to support service delivery. This graph merely shows you how we've been growing over the years. Exponential growth, as we described it, by end of March, we had more than 80,000 registrations. As I indicated to you, we're now sitting at more than 100,000. Those that are temporarily suspended because they may not have submitted tax clearance certificates when they expired has resulted in the active contractors being registrations being about 95,000. I'm not going to go through all the slides. What I would like to show you here is that with grade contractors from grade 1, being the entry level, up to grade 9, who actually don't have a cap in terms of the projects they do. As I said, we're currently sitting at 95,000 registrations at the moment. That figure, 92,000, has actually improved since September. You can see that grade 1s occupy about 80% of the total number of active registrations. It has posed a challenge, but we've actually worked around that so that it does not pose a serious threat on us. We now register contractors at grade 1 over the counter as opposed to them waiting for up to 21 working days like your grade 5, your grade 9. That has helped the CRDB in terms of this capacity. This was effected from January last year. You can see that as we grow towards grade 9, the numbers begin to be smaller and smaller. That should not be unexpected. All over the world, it happens like this. But in South Africa in particular, at the bottom, we have simply too many contractors that are trying to actually find opportunities where they can put their food on the table. The slide also shows that we have more than 4,000, almost 5,000 here. I think the recent stats are that we have actually more than 5,000 upgrades that have happened since the CRDB was established, CRDB Register of Contractors was established, and more than 84% of those contractors are actually black-owned contractors. This one just indicates by province the numbers of people that we have, and we decided to basically use the alphabetical order so that we don't favor any particular province. But what is important to note is that when we started with Limpopo, Limpopo was leading in terms of the number of registered contractors. Then they were overtaken by Gauteng, obviously, because the head offices of companies are basically there. And KwaZulu-Natal has overtaken everybody because they have a robust contractor development program that we are actually monitoring. And we work with them on a number of projects to make sure that contractor development is actually better understood. You'll see that Northern Cape has only 951 according to the stats. It is because there is less development happening there, and also contractors may actually decide on the basis of job opportunities in the area, the number of projects available to register with us. So you'll see that the numbers are actually supported by projects in the provinces. This is the actual number of companies registered with the CRDB. As I indicated, we have more than 72,000 when we expected to have about 10,000 to 12,000. Strategic objectives at a high level, we need to focus on organizational capacitation. We've managed to do that for the last 2 years at least. We've managed to keep senior management as opposed to what used to happen in the past. Without any capacity, the organization would not be stable. We are focusing on value-added service delivery. That is why Vision 2012 was actually created. We want to promote research and development through research institutions. Phase two of the registers is required by our Act to improve efficiencies within the context of a transforming industry. Procurement reform has always been driven through the standardization of procurement, a document or a prescript that we've developed called the Standard for Uniformity, SFU, that I referred to earlier on. This is just the structure of the CREB. The CREB has four core programs, technical programs. The first block up to the fourth one under the CEO, Growth and Contractor Development, and then the second one, Construction Industry Performance, third one, Procurement and Delivery Management, and then the last one is Registered, or CRS. Growth and Contractor Development, this looks after the enterprise development, as well as the management of the provincial offices that the CREB has started establishing. Construction Industry Performance, this looks after information about the industry, research, and related information, the Knowledge Center, for instance. Procurement and Delivery, this takes care of procurement reform in the industry. You may actually be aware that now, whether it's Department of Public Works or Telcom, Eskom, when they issue out a tender, it must be structured in a similar way. Obviously, the program that deals with the registers deals with the two active registers at this stage. There's another one coming up that will actually be preparing the regulations for and piloting during the course of next year. And then the last block there is the CFO and Program Manager for Corporate Services that deals with specifically IT, Human Resources Administration, Supply Chain Management, as well as Financial Management. IT is very crucial in that area because as we have offices around the country, we can actually run a workshop from one center and broadcast that workshop through all the other centers through video conferencing. I will not go through this slide because it just explains what I've just explained, so I will skip this slowly and then deal with the forecast, key forecast for 2009-2010. But I want to emphasize that while the forecast is for this particular financial year, it actually runs across a number of years as we continuously improve or our projects may actually require financial support over a number of years. It's contractor registration where we believe that we need to deal with amendments quite regularly up to now. I believe that the last one that we did with effect from January this year was the biggest combined with what we did by January last year. But we're looking at the changes as we believe that we have a challenge in terms of the applications for reassessment after 3 years of registration with the CREB. The next one is project registration, which was slow initially because of the relaxation that was introduced earlier. It expired on the 15th of November 2007. We've decided to upscale this because we believe that there's an opportunity for us to collect revenue out of that particular area. The revenue model that we are developing will actually have a slight improvement based on what was proposed in the past. We're in the consultative process at this stage, and it may take up to 12 months for clients to know and advise us on how it should be implemented. I will not go into the details of this one except to highlight that the Register of Professional Service Providers is the next register. We've done consultation. We're busy with the regulations at the moment. We'll be piloting it during the course of next year and then roll it out. Enforcement of compliance is let's call it a project that we're taking very seriously. It's costing us a lot of money. We conduct disciplinary hearings on those people that have committed fraud and corruption, either within the CREB or outside the contractors, and then we deal with clients that also have not dealt with this appropriately. The National Infrastructure Maintenance Strategy is a huge industry, multi-billion rand industry. It was launched last year in May. We've had a few challenges. We had to deal with the issue of the budget and working with the department, we are now taking it forward because a budget has been allocated for that. But it's a huge industry that we believe should have benefited, especially the emerging sector, already. Phase two of the registers looks at quality, health and safety, and environment, and we believe that there's an opportunity here to actually implement this. We are ready to actually conduct pilots. Benchmarking, we need to do things in such a way that we don't reinvent the wheel, and we need to compare different provinces. We need to compare ourselves with others in the world within a transforming environment, of course. These tables just show that in future what we'd like to do to avoid risk is to assess contractors for competence when they enter the race of contractors at the CRDP. Up to now, at the entrance level, we don't have measures to actually assess the competence. We'd like to do that as soon as possible, because what we've discovered is that in all other countries, when a contractor wants to register, they must actually prove that they have competence in a particular area. If you say, I'm going to be a civil engineer, there must be competence in that area. Otherwise, we'll actually allow people to go and build bridges that they have no knowledge of building. Performance reports are very critical for each and every project. We'd like to have performance reports that come from the contractors themselves, but also from clients, as displayed through this next table. But if I go back to this one, we're not going to focus a lot on grade one, because we believe that is more like training ground for them to get used to a regulated environment. But as they progress, they need to then have management systems. For instance, they need to comply with health and safety requirements, and therefore it becomes important for anybody who participates in the construction industry to make sure that they actually understand these things. The establishment of the Employment Skills Development Agency is an area that is normally focused on by the CETAs. We have been talking to the construction CETA industry, ended up advising us to fast track this. We've applied for funding to roll it out. We have a business plan for it at this stage. We believe that as soon as we get funding, this will assist us. Now, this will impact very positively on graduates, for instance, that may not have got jobs and therefore they don't have experiential training. Those people who went to former technicons, now universities of technology, so that they can at least graduate, because it's a requirement that they do a bit of experiential training before they can graduate. So it will facilitate it around the country. It's not going to be a CRDP ESTA. It's going to be an industry ESTA. We're just facilitating it so that when it is operating efficiently, we can then a CRDP perhaps pull out or join others in terms of driving it forward. At this stage, we see ourselves playing a critical role as requested by industry. Human resources development, we're focusing on this. We need to retain our people, as I said. We specialize in specific areas. It becomes a problem to actually employ somebody from outside if they're not familiar with the environment that we operate in. Internal audit process is taken seriously to support risk management as well as corporate governance. EDMS, I've already indicated that we are now going to be scanning documents that come to us so that we avoid fraud and corruption, but also to facilitate accessibility to information. We also are focusing on the project database to make sure that we don't repeat projects unnecessarily. Not that it has been happening, but it's a good practice for any knowledge-based organization to do that. Contractor development, a very contentious issue at this stage. The CRDP, together with the Department of Public Works, has actually developed what we call the National Contractor Development Program, NCDP. It is a framework in which CRDP plays a role, and then the clients play a role. The CRDP cannot, unfortunately, do development directly, because we don't award projects. Development on projects must happen on the basis of projects that have been awarded. But we work very closely with departments to make sure that we assist them in developing their own contractor development programs. This program has indicative targets that are at the national level. The provincial departments are now are being assisted to actually have their own. The steps that are there are indicative, like I said, but we need to make sure that everybody takes a chunk of these indicative targets. We have focused on provincial departments of public works, and we've now included other infrastructure departments as well as municipalities to establish the Provincial Contractor Development Forum, chaired by DPWs in the provinces, with CRDP acting as a secretariat. We're beginning to make impact in that direction. The construction contact centers are the outreach offices of the CRDP, working with the provincial departments. The provincial departments of public works, however they are called nowadays, will provide the premises so that CRDP doesn't have to pay rent, and therefore it reduces our costs. They procure services of contractors to build these premises if they don't already have them. There are only two offices remaining now to be launched. Limpopo should actually be launched hopefully before the end of this financial year. The building is ready. They had to apply for the telecom line, which took a bit of time. We now have it, and then they need to have the UPS. Once that is ready, CRDP will move into that office. Northwest had a problem with procurement of the services of the contractor. We do not interfere in that process because they use their own procurement systems to make sure that they get the right contractor. But we only advise them and assist where we're required to. I believe this one might not actually be launched during this financial year. That is until March. But we're working with them. We're trying to get information as to where the wheels fell off. Phase in value add through the CCCs. We see the CCCs as the drivers of contractor development in the provinces, which we didn't have before. So we have seven that have already been launched in conjunction with the National Department of Public Works. We're left with two, like I indicated. The stakeholder forum, we have a stakeholder forum on the 23rd of October, that is on Friday this week, where contractors and clients and other stakeholders will converge and advise the CRDP and the minister on where the priorities should be. We would like to extend an invitation to the honorable members who can afford to come. Unfortunately, we're not able to provide assistance financially in terms of traveling and accommodation. But those that are able to make it would like to extend an invitation to you. We'll actually send a formal invitation through the chairperson if it has not already been done. I wouldn't like to go through the other details except to reflect on the recommendations of the five-year review panel, that we must continue to implement these so that next time when we are reviewed after 10 years of the CRDP, we are actually found to have implemented these as per the recommendations. This is just an example on performance measurement. We would have a problem, for instance, out of the now five programs, four core programs, let's make them six. Four core programs that are technical, corporate services, as well as the office of the CEO. But this is how we normally structure our performance, with a description of the strategic project, operational objective, and then the target. We may have had challenges in the past in terms of how some of these targets are set, because a lot of the work that we do is actually ongoing, but we are refining how we actually set targets so that it would be easy to measure our performance. In terms of the budget, I would request the CFO to take us through the numbers as opposed to the listing of forecast areas, because we've covered quite a number of them.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chair, members, if we could just go through our budget for the 9-10 financial year. If you look up on the board, we have, in terms of our revenue, CRDB's revenue is comprised of registration revenue, that is own generated revenue through contractor registration. We get transfers from government, and also we derive some income through interest from our investments that we're making, if we have any extra funds that we can actually put in the banks. In terms of composition, the registration figure comprised about 37% of our total revenue. Government's portion about 60%, and the 2% relates to interest income. For the financial year 9-10, registrar's income expected is 34.1 million. Transfers from government, we expect 59.2 million. We've already received half of that. Interest income, we anticipate we'll get 2.2 million, and that will add up to the 95.5 million for the year. And how we will use it up is a makeup of personnel costs, admin costs, capital, and operational costs. Personnel costs are about 42.7 million. Admin comes up to 22.1 million. Capital is 3 million. And if you look at across to the other years, you know, in terms of the estimate of national expenditure, it's actually dropping when you go to the next 3 years. This is because of the launch of the CCC offices. It takes on average about 1.2 million, for example, to establish the IT infrastructure per provincial office. Obviously, I think we will carry over that funding to the next year, as the CEO has already indicated that Northwest is unlikely to come online this year. Operational costs is about 27.5 million. That's inflation based in terms of growth, and the total expenditure is now 95.5 million, which equals the total revenue. In terms of the breakdown per program or per department within CIDB, the CEO has already put up the organogram, and the office of the CEO is made up of about 8.9 million. The COP services is about 24.9 million of that 95 million. Growth and contractor development, which is where the provincial offices lie, is 21.1 million. And CIP is 9.3 million. And procurement and delivery comes up to 10.6 million. And registers is 20.3 million. And that adds up to the 95.5 million that we expect to spend for the year.
That was the first set. I don't know whether we should take questions now or wait until the second one has been.
I want you to finish your story so that we engage it fully. When I look into your second set, most of the issues are covered in the first one. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So if you can just highlight the most important issues so that at least you spend 10 minutes on this one. Maximum.
Thank you, Chester. The structure, we're going to omit the first slide and deal more with the maybe performance summary and then the presentation of financials, just giving examples on that, and then start with the audit process and then deal with conclusions. All this has been dealt with before. So performance summary, first one. In terms of performance summary, as we indicated, that we structure performance measurement in a particular way. We highlight projects that we want to do. A lot of our projects are cutting across a number of years. They cut across various programs. In terms of the National Contractor Development Program, which deals with the National Contractor Development Program as a specific program there, as well as the construction contact centers, the provincial offices that we have. If you look at NCDP, although it's not our responsibility as such, we always strive to actually go the extra mile and do certain things that would support various programs that we implement. We signed MOUs with FNB, APSA, and recently the Standard Bank. We're still waiting for NetBank to come on board. We drive this process. We believe that this is actually assisting contractors as part of this NCDP framework to make sure that once they are registered with us, they can see the benefit. We are now dealing with the banks to make sure that we understand what their issues are. So our performance in that area has actually been commendable. There's phase one and phase two of the rollout. We've dealt with the provincial departments, mainly public works, but we've now roped in the municipalities and other infrastructure departments. In terms of the construction contact centers, three construction contact centers were actually launched during the year under review. That was in Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and Free State. Northern Cape being a very small office based on their numbers, we had to negotiate a special arrangement to make sure that the provincial department takes more responsibility on that. While we had hoped that all the others, the balance, that is the other two, would also be launched during that year, we actually encountered problems with respect to Limpopo as well as Northwest. And again, it was beyond our control, but we've actually delivered on that. These are just highlights, by the way. the registrar's program. We wanted to have high-quality registration service and further enhancement of the CRS business. We've spoken about this a bit. We decided to then adopt business management, business process management as an approach to improve the quality of service. It is a challenge, I must confess. We're dealing with too many numbers versus what we actually expected. We are actually hoping that around this time, the registration of contractors would be tailing off, would be re-registering contractors after their three-year validity period. But it seems we're actually escalating. Maybe it's because of the economic environment in the country. We analyze the information. We cannot really tell it's because of this or that. Maybe it's just because of the boom in the construction industry. Regulation amendments, we made them effective from January 2009 in terms of grades 2 to 9. We had split this, and the other one was done the previous financial year for grade 1, so I won't talk about that. Phasing out of outsourced health desks, we wanted to phase them out as we bring in the fully fledged triple Cs. We now have CIDB health desks as opposed to the outsourced health desks. So we've actually managed to deliver on this, although we went to an extra month in Northwest because of the problems with the procurement system there. Again, in terms of performance summary in procurement and delivery management, this is where, in terms of procurement, a lot of things are happening. The standard for uniformity advice in terms of how the CRDP requirement should be applied happens in this program. The ID program that I was talking about, we produced an ID brochure as our mandate out of the four partners, Public Works, DBSA, CRDP, and National Treasury, and that brochure has been developed so that we can guide the public sector client department to actually implement ID. The development of construction procurement as a profession, we now have a discussion paper that was achieved during the year under review. In terms of interacting with stakeholders, we have held meetings with the focus group. They advise us in terms of how procurement can happen, and work here mainly with the clients because they have their procurement systems as opposed to contractors. CIP, Construction Industry Performance, we have institutional support, the status reports, and construction industry indicators that show where the direction of construction. For instance, if you look at that, it will show you if clients are happy with the performance of contractors, if contractors are happy with payments by the clients. So it's a lot of information that is available in the form of hard copy documents as well as on our website. We've issued practice guides, and then phase two best practice schemes. We're actually ready to go out and pilot as we speak. Research and development, we've been working with research institutions. Unfortunately, last year, we had a bit of a shortfall in our budget, therefore we began to slow down on some of these. Research and development is one of them. The Office of the CEO manages stakeholder relations. The stakeholder forum is coordinated from my office. We did hold a stakeholder forum meeting in September 2008. This year, as I indicated, will be in October. There is no specific month when it must be held. We ask the minister to choose the most appropriate date, but we propose the month when it should happen. Publications. CRDP, as you may have seen, an average budget of 100 million rand is not enough. So we decided that instead of going the route of advertorials where we would pay in excess of 200,000 rand or 80,000 rand, depending on the advertorial, we decided that we must endorse publications. There are two publications that are endorsed by CRDP to give information on CRDP on a regular basis. We also have others that we have endorsed because they are targeting certain markets. We don't pay for these in terms of producing them. We may assist in terms of disseminating information, distributing these documents, which I feel has been a very strategic move to save on costs. We will actually be sending a pack with all these publications to the honorable members. We'll just package them so that you get all the information. Fraud and corruption, another area that will have been coordinated through my office until the end of the year under review. We now have a legal and compliance manager who assists in terms of running the forensics contract and it is actually working well but demands a lot of money from the CRDB. I would like to hand over to the CFO to take us through the financial performance.
Thank you, Chair. The CRDB's financial performance for 2008 and 9 is as follows. We'll start off with the revenue for the year. Our revenue from government decreased by 16% from 49.8 million to 41.89 million of the previous year. Revenue from registers has increased by 21.11% to 35.3 million from 29 million of the previous year. Expenditure. Our total expenditure increased by 4.4% compared to the previous year. And the bulk of this increase relates to staff costs, which increased by about 6 million from previous year. I think if you look on page 55 of the report, it also shows you the growth in staff costs, you know, relative to this growth in expenditure. Finance income, which is income from the banks or investments, increased by 6.54% to 2.9 million, or rather decreased from 3.154 million to 2.9 million in the previous year. We had a deficit for the year of 1.351 million after depreciation of 4.238, the non-cash item. And in the previous year, we had a surplus of 1.2 million. We had a deficit of 1.3 million after depreciation of 4.23 million, and the depreciation in the previous year was sitting at about 2 million. The cash and cash equivalents, that's the cash sitting in the bank, is made up of 5.5 million, rather has increased by 5.5 million from 30.287. And the bulk of this increase relates to investments, which grew by 8.754 million from 22.7. Accounts payable and income received in advance. Total accounts payable, and this relates to your day-to-day creditors balances, have increased by 2.3 million from 14.4. And as you say here, the bulk of this increase relates to trade and other payables, which grew by 3.5 million from 5.7. We have income received in advance, which has increased by 10 million from 13.748 million. And yeah, and that's the overall status in terms of our performance in the financials.
Okay, I'll briefly take you through the overview of the Auditor General's findings, but then I would request the CFO to give us the details on each one if required. We had a qualification, as it was indicated, and the qualification is based on prior adjustments. The year under review does not have a qualification. It is the prior adjustments, but unfortunately that had to come as the Auditor General had completed the audit. It's a matter that we are addressing. We are going to be interacting with the Auditor General when we've concluded the activities that would lead to corrective action by end of November. The last batch of interactions will actually be by the end of this financial year, by end of March. We also have two emphases of matter, one actually happening automatically because of the one qualification, and then we have one other matter and then other legal and regulatory requirements. I'd like the CFO to take us through the details of these and contextualize them, and then we can add them whenever possible.
No, it's fine. You can do that, but I don't want to go on forever. We must allow space for engagement, you see. So let me allow you, CFO, just to raise the issues, because most of the issues are reflected in the report. We don't have to repeat rather than to highlight My interest is how you're dealing with the problems as well. You can state the problems and how you're dealing with them. I'm sure there's something you can do in a few minutes. Yeah. Chief Executive, you won't have another bite. Okay.
Thank you, sir. The first slide will deal with the main body of the audit report itself. The qualification itself on the prior year error disclosure that we had to do, which we couldn't do at the time. We have already started addressing the issue. In November itself, in fact, November is actually our target date to finish all the issues that have actually come up in the audit. The next meeting of our audit committee is in the first week of December, whereby we require to actually report back about what is done with all those issues that have actually arisen and to give proof. So final review would actually be done by the audit committee in that meeting. And as I said, on the first issue, that's the end of November, planning has already started. We've also gone beyond what the qualification has actually been about, because we're saying that we need to be ready for in the next year, because there are new statements that will actually be coming in line, which are actually new, which we need to be prepared in terms of our preparation for the year, for next year's year end, and training will actually be provided about that. In fact, importantly for us is that in January and at the end of February, what we're going to be doing is we're going to have a dry run of the year end. So essentially, we'll be running like a full year end, as if the AG is with us at the time, so that then we can have like a month or two until the end of May, during which we will then be reviewing our status to say that are we ready or are we not ready in terms of that audit. I think that just summarizes overall the how we're going to approach the matters that have actually been brought up in the audit report itself. Thank you, Chair.
I can see you're ready to go. Last point.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just wanted to actually make a statement here that we've consistently made commitments to the Ministry of Public Works as well as other stakeholders that the CREP, we will not be found wrong on the side of financial mismanagement. We want to make the statement here, we'll do everything in our power to make sure that next time we come here, we have a clean report. The matter that has been raised, we worked very hard last year to make sure that the asset register has integrity. It may have come as a surprise to us that we had ended up with the qualification, but the point remains that we need to do something around that area. We'll put in resources to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And therefore, that's the commitment that we'd like to make to the portfolio committee here.
No, thank you very much. I'm sure this has been a very long, patient engagement, using your ears very effectively and digesting the information as well, members. Let me start with the critical ones. The one that need your responses is in terms of the invitation on Friday in the light of the cancelled workshop. Members who are available must just liaise with ACONA while the invitation is still coming so that we can coordinate the people who are going and so on to the stakeholders forum. I think that is the one thing. The information packs, you're supposed actually to have brought the motive. Didn't you have provision for extra baggage? But nevertheless, I'm sure that you should just forward them to our corner for distribution as soon as possible. I'm not sure which publications you're using, the two publications, but we'll see that when they come. You're supposed to give us the information about the size, distribution, and nature of and development of the contractors. That's a matter that I think was also turned forward as well. basically about that, or is it also about the nature, value, and distribution of projects as well, in terms of how we're doing in the industry? Before I just state my views and also engage on some of the issues, let me give members to start engaging with the report. That is Denny Kigano, honorable, and before you speak, let me check who else wants to follow. Okay. Dr. Masango, in that order. But Denny? Okay. Can you assist Denny with the pressing?
Yeah, the workshop on Friday, last week we had South African Council of Engineers, and they were complaining about the same thing, that there's a need for skills like engineering in the country, when the big problem is that some are produced, but they don't get apprenticeship. They are produced by universities, end up idling because they've got nowhere to go to end their qualification with real experience, some kind of apprenticeship. Now, I'm just wondering whether you interact with the South African Engineering Council, because it looks like they are the ones who are monitoring all students who are qualifying at university, and if they've been invited on Friday, because I think interaction between you, the industry, and them, the producers of the needed skills, will be very important. That's the first one. The second one, which for me is the most important, you know, when we listen to a report like yours, we can hear about finances and the like, but foremost in our minds are this issue that we went to election and number one was job creation. The president's speech, State of the Nation speech, said this nation needs to create jobs. And we hear your report saying construction industry is one of the big industries that contribute the highest to the economy. And people accuse this economy of being a jobless growth. So today it looks like we've got the culprits here who are creating a growth in the economy, but a jobless growth. Now, when you mentioned the department, I was wondering, why don't we have a department in this construction council or board that monitors job creation? Because we had reports here of some construction companies that were saying, no, we don't want to use labor intensive because they affect quality of the work that we do. While in other provinces, labor intensive methods have been used and quality has been as good as the mechanized ones. So I'm just saying, you know, when politicians and people of the nation want job creation as number one, and the people who must implement in effect that come and give us reports, but you don't hear this focus, this highlight of job creation, you get worried. The alignment that you're talking about, that construction companies or companies are not aligned to political and national interests. I would like to hear your comments about that. Sorry, Chair, to belabor a bit on this.
No, that's perfect. This is your time, but then you can still come back. We're going to engage with the CIDB until we satisfy. We've got time, you see. We give them an hour, we can take 2.5 hours with them. All right, why don't we take Baba Masango and take a response? Or maybe let's do this. Let's deal with the first question, the one that is raised, so that we don't cluster them too much.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. In response to Member Kekane, Kekana.
Yeah, Kekana.
We work with the Engineering Council of South Africa. They're actually one of our stakeholders. We invite all the people that can contribute to our stakeholder forum. But beyond the stakeholder forum, we work with specific stakeholders. Sometimes we get invited by them. Other times, other people invite us and we go there together. The issue of people who don't have apprenticeship is actually being addressed through the Employment Skills Development Agency that I referred to. We were actually asked by industry and this organization was actually part of that, to make sure that we create an intervention that would not ordinarily sit with the CETA, but they asked us to actually roll it out. We prepared a business plan, we're sharing information with them. As soon as we get funding, they will be part of the management of this organization to make sure that people get proper apprenticeship, looking at artisans, looking at those people that attend universities of technology, as well as universities where they would actually graduate, to make sure that they get deployed in projects where they could actually get relevant experiential training. So we work with them. In terms of job creation, as the CIDP, we don't directly engage in job creation because we don't give projects, but we are a supporting mechanism to make sure that those that need to have a grade and they qualify for the grade will actually go out there and have the opportunity to employ people that they can actually use. So we support labor-intensive methods. We've actually developed the labor-intensive method for road construction, which has been distributed over, I would say, the last 3 years, and it has actually been used by specific clients to construct roads. I went to visit a road in Limpopo together with the ministry in 2007. And I saw it with my own eyes, and it is exciting, like you are saying, Honourable Member. The quality is just as good as the others. But I think we need to see the challenges here. Construction could actually be faster with the mechanized method, and if the client chooses to use that because of the turnaround time, because they want the facility as soon as possible, it may be a challenge that sits with the client and not with the CRDP. But the CRDP has actually provided certain methods specifically in terms of road construction. So it's a matter that we do take seriously, and it is used by specific clients.
Chief, I think it's important that that method be shared with us. I don't know whether you've got a package thereof, or so that we can also see how in other provinces it can be utilized properly. You see, Esther, I don't know whether it's you're putting your hopes and aspirations on that as a mechanism or a tool to address this enormous problem of experiential training that people are not getting and can't therefore get qualified. You're putting emphasis on this establishment. Is that the only intervention that just expand about that, because I think we're dealing with a much bigger problem here. Of very people who are frustrated about the process, of qualifying for their type of
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The idea of the ESTA, as I indicated, is normally done by the CETAs and is part of normal training. In the construction industry, it was not happening. We engaged with the CETA, construction CETA, that is, to see if this could be one of the instruments that could be used. See the ESTA as a national operation that industry will have to own, that industry will have to support, but we're not saying that a company or companies that have specific initiatives could not actually do that on their own. But we're saying from an interventionist approach, we need to have a formal kind of arrangement where we will negotiate with contractors that are doing specific projects and make sure that when people are deployed, they are deployed where they will get relevant training. What is happening at the moment is people who have gone to technicons would then apply with a particular company, and as long as they serve a period of 6 months at a time, it's fine. But what they are doing is not actually taken care of. The ESTA would actually have a database of all the people that need this kind of training. They would then be deployed on a project without impacting negatively on the people that are actually running the project, so that they can actually have experiential training. As soon as they've gained knowledge in a particular area that is required, they may then be deployed on another project. I understand that there may be challenges. For instance, a person who is based in Richards Bay, and maybe there's only one big project that is going on there, and that person has been deployed to actually learn about that particular project. That person may have to be moved to another part of the country where there may be the most relevant training that they need, and the mechanism of actually taking that person there will have to be dealt with. But we believe that this is a better approach than the ad hoc arrangements where people are just asked to work for 12 months and then they write a report, yes, I've been here for 12 months. They must actually say the requirements for my diploma or degree is that I must do project management, I must do design, I must do this, that, and that. They must be able to say this that was expected has been done, it was done in this company, this was my mentor. Next item is this one, was supposed to be done like this. This is the person who was my mentor, it was done in this company. They don't have to stick to just one company to do that. So this is in addition to the current programs where people do this. I went through the same program myself. I was employed by a company, but I ended up doing a small variety of different things. But if I was actually part of a program like the ESTA, I would have benefited from various aspects of engineering. So it's an intervention, and it's supposed to add to other things. That
no, I wanted to make this follow-up and say, you know, like when you go to this Friday meeting or when you're giving a report like you've just given us next week, part of what we are upfront looking at is for you to say, though this is not my core function, but because it is a priority, it's such a big matter in this country, the issue of job creation, this is our contribution to this. This is how we're trying to influence stakeholders. You don't, it doesn't have to be a core function, but you could play a very important role, because when you go to your meeting on Friday, you could highlight this thing and make sure. You know, when you go to the communities and ask them, do you want this road or this house to be finished with mechanized methods within 3 months, or should we rather finish them in 8 months but employ people? They tell you employ people who we would tolerate 8 months, because for them, development is about people. You can finish in 3 months, but if people are starving, children are sleeping with empty stomachs, as a nation, we're going nowhere. So when you give reports, we listen carefully, and if we don't feel there's this big highlight of people, we feel you're not aligned to national interest, in a sense. And I would say that when you go to the meeting, and next time, really, we'd like to hear how you're grappling about this problem, because this is not a governmental problem. It's our problem as a nation. It affects stability, crime, all kind of things in our society. I just wanted to make that comment and say job creation for us is important, because this is the only way we can stabilize this society. And the advantage is you employ these people, after 10 years they shall have gained experience, and you can start calling in the sitter to come and upgrade and give them tests and even give them qualifications so that they can stand on their own 2 feet. So you'll be building capacity, they're skilling them by giving them experimental skills. Thanks.
Thanks, Bradeni. Let me state the following. I mean, the question of the what's ESTA is commendable. We'll have to keep a close eye in terms of that development as a committee. The question of experiential training is as old as I don't know when. We have said that we are going to engage with professional councils directly to see how they deal with this matter, and also to see how the link between that and the university is unfolding, or various universities, because it's not just about that, it's about also accreditation at university level and things like those. So those are all the matters that we'll have to engage with, but specifically also with the councils. We've said that within the CBE, we're saying it now, we'll say it wherever we get a platform to find an appropriate time to deal with this. Because this is a matter that needs a bit of activism here. You see, if we leave this matter to voluntarism, like it is now, apply, get a vacancy if you're lucky, and so on and so on, we're never going to go anywhere. You see, I'm told that the way apartheid government was doing it, it was mandatory for the state-owned enterprises to train people out of universities. Now we come into this democracy, we're leaving it to the same council, some of them still very programmed, I must say, you know, to be able to say, listen, train our people. We've got a lot of black people who are actually, what do you call it, frustrated by this aspect. So it's a matter that I think we should deal with. Nadimasang, we are going and it's your turn, yes, sir. Okay. I'll give it to Tade Rabotapi to deal with the next matter. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. My question is, at which level is the CIDB involved with the building of the RDP houses in particular? That's the first one. The second one, what monitoring systems are there in place to ensure that these contractors uphold the name of the CIDB? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member, for the question. The CIDB is actually not involved with the construction of the RDP housing. We have a strict separation of mandates. There's the National Home Builders Registration Council is concerned with the construction of houses, the builders, house builders, being registered with them. The CIDB is not, and we haven't registered home builders on the register of contractors either. They are registered with the National Home Builders Registration Council. So we do pick up this concern about the status of low-cost housing or affordable housing and the non-performance in that area. But unfortunately, it's not within our mandate at all. And we would be encroaching on the mandate of the National Home Builders Registration Council if we dealt with it.
Therefore, the impact, the negative impact that this is making in the industry, you don't take the blame, you're shifting it to the council. Is that the understanding? What I'm trying to say is to say that, listen, my mother-in-law that doesn't know what you're telling us. If there is shoddy or poor quality of housing, it's the construction industry that gets dented, you see. So whilst maybe technically you can be saying that, but you can't take a hands-off approach on this matter, what is your engagement, involvement, even with the council of the home builders and so on this matter, rather than just separating the mandates? Because we're talking about one thing here that is in the interest of this nation, to have better houses.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'd like to expand on it in this way. The home building industry is actually specified as exempt from the CIDB requirements. It's actually exempted, or contractors are exempted from registering with the CIDB. But when we talk about construction, we talk about the construction in the broadest sense. For instance, when we register contractors in the class of works called general buildings, it's contractors that would be able to lay a foundation, build a wall, put up a roof. But ours is more complex than just home building. When you talk about construction and talk about experiential training, we talk about all those people that need experiential training. What we're finding that is the Department of Housing, we report to the Ministry of Public Works, and home builders would actually report to the Ministry of Housing, now called Human Settlement. I think the challenge is when we go into housing, we would need to have that mandate supported by financial means. If we delivered, for instance, on that side and we did not deliver on our side, it would actually be questionable. Why did you go there and you didn't actually clean up your own house? So I think it's a matter where we need to work together. We do work with the NHBRC but we are careful not to actually point out the challenges to them because we also have our own challenges. Just like we did with the CETA. With the CETA, we decided to go through a process of explaining our mandate to them, allow them to explain their mandate to us, and we said, but then there are opportunities for us to work together even if it's not our mandate. Then we sealed it in an MOU where we said we can now work together without you blaming us, because that was actually beginning to be quite a constraint. NHBRC, we were requested to actually look at the two registers working together. But unfortunately, the NHBRC database is structured for a warranty scheme. They have inspectors who go and inspect projects. We don't have that in our mandate, and also our capacity would not allow for that. But we work with them. As I'm talking to you, we are actually arranging to have a meeting with one of their senior managers to see how we can actually work together, but not in terms of merging the registers, because we tried that and it didn't work out. But we need to work together with this entity to make sure that as the Department of Housing now is trying to use, sorry, Department of Human Settlement is now in various provinces trying to apply our systems as opposed to the ones that come from the NHBRC. I think we need to just be careful, because there may be an expectation which actually wipes out our budget focusing on housing, and then we haven't actually dealt with our own area. So while we're interested in assisting in that area, we need to make sure also that what people are actually expecting from us does actually happen. But we are continuously meeting with them to deal with it.
Follow up. Oh, go, guys. Follow up.
Just a follow up.
I'll come with you,
Madam. No, I think, yeah, I'm not sure, but I was involved with this forming of the CITP. I think what we are saying here is that NHBRC, they monitor the building of houses. Now, basically, you have the component of contractors which are registered in South Africa. Basically, what we are saying is that get involved in the component of contractors, not the monitoring of houses and so on, so that if they want contractors, they get registered contractors, which you, it is your duty to register the contractor, not in NHBRC. Let us be clear. We don't say be involved in houses, but the component of registered contractors rests with you as a CITP.
Sorry, through you, Chairperson. May I just clarify, the contractors who are involved in home building do actually register with the NHBRC, just like we do with contractors who are not involved in home building. Like I said, our regulations specifically exclude home building contractors, together with all others that are actually exempted from registering with us. What we were discussing at some stage was, can we have a common registration, those that are doing home building and those that are involved in construction projects, building, we talk here about building clinics, schools, etc., etc. So there are two registers. The contractors for home building actually register with the NHBRC, just like contractors who are involved in non-home building projects register with the CIDB. So there are two specific registers, and we don't have to actually cross the line on that until there is a mandate that has been changed. And organizations end up fighting on these things, and we've been through it with the CETA. We've managed that relationship. We're working with the NHBRC now. And therefore, there are two registers, and people do register in their specific register.
Five would be building schools and housing or whatever. They would register with the NHBC and also register with you. You see? But you specifically for building houses for people, that's why you don't get involved. I mean, that aspect in terms of checking the quality, you leave that to that. And the instrument that you use for that is the regulations that exempt them specifically.
Yes. If I may explain it this way, you may have a home builder who also wants to build schools and clinics. They will register in both organizations, because there is a regulatory element which must be based on, are you registered with us or not? For instance, the NHBRC will punish contractors that are registered with them if they don't comply with their requirements. We don't get involved with that. We don't get involved with our specifications. contractors that are registered with us, they are registered with us so that we can then implement sanctions when things happen. Now, if you have people that are registered with CREP and they do things in another field, they might actually not be able to deal with them the way their rules actually apply. We have different rules. But if, like Greenacre LTA, if they want to get involved in housing, they will actually have a board that shows that they are registered with the NHBRC. Therefore, because it goes beyond just the construction of that house, it's also the owners who are supposed to register also with the NHBRC for the warranty scheme. So the NHBRC operates a different system that has a warranty scheme attached to it. We don't have a warranty scheme. So the registration is actually linked to the end user of the house, which is based on the value of the house. That is why they generate a lot of revenue out of that system, which the CRDP doesn't use. So it would actually create conflict between these two. When we institute disciplinary procedures on our contractors, if they are not registered with us, the client should not have appointed them in the first place. But also the quality of houses that are being built, we're concerned about it, and we're saying all construction training must be up to standard. Whether they go into housing, they come to us is the skill. They'll end up registering with us anyway if they want to, or they may have registered with us and they want to register with the NHBRC. But they need to then register with the two bodies because the registers serve totally different purposes. And I think that's the point that we need to make.
Okay. I want to move away from this one. Is there any follow-up on this one in particular before I move away? Let me take Ubauma Sangu and then take Ubradeni.
Yeah, Chairperson, I was also going to talk about it because I will tell you there is a big confusion. People on the ground, they don't know with whom to register. And this looks like, you know, people are being milked of their money. Because some of them, they have to re-register every year. And I'll tell you, I know a lot of lower building houses that are registered with CIDP. And every time I ask them, why are you not registered with CIDP? They say, no, it's just the same thing. And it's not the same thing as we're hearing. And I'm just saying somewhere they must come with a line and say, I mean, if I build a house, I can build a clinic, I can build schools. So that's building construction. Mm-hmm. It doesn't put me at a limit. Mm-hmm. And this thing is really creating a lot of confusion. Because you can't get there. If I'm going to build a house and I want to go and get money from the bank is not going to give me money if the guy who's going to build is not registered with NHBRC. But a lot of people have thought this is the right channel to dodge the NHBRC and register with the CIDB, and which is not the case.
Okay. Then?
No,
This is what we, in principle, talking about, like when we're talking about job creation, that in this nation, in order to develop, we're going to have to integrate. You can't just say jobs are for politicians to see about and, we're doing something else. Somewhere things must converge. I mean, for example, town planners, when they plan a township or a suburb, it is roads, it is houses, it is schools, it is clinics, it is sports centers. Now, if you've got nice, beautiful tar roads, but houses are substandard, or houses are nice and roads have decayed, they've got potholes because they're not properly constructed, it ultimately, for an outsider, let alone local people, if a tourist is traveling, you'll just see. If he gives reports about South Africa, to invest in South Africa, he says, their suburbs are so badly done. So construction is bad in that country. I'm just saying a holistic and somehow where we all converge, an umbrella body that can, because one negative thing impacts negatively on the whole thing, on the whole suburb. And so, just to separate, you can separate area of jurisdiction or line function, but ultimately somewhere there must be a meeting point. And I was wondering whether you do have that umbrella board where you come together, because a township or a suburb is just a way to. Nobody is going to separate that, no, the roads were done well, but the houses were done badly. They look at it holistically. So I think that umbrella thing in construction is very important.
Okay. Thanks, Brother.
Okay.
Excuse me,
Chair. I had a second question about the monitoring system.
Can you remind us of the second question? Because the question that you had here was about the involvement in RDP housing.
Okay.
And the coupled with that was how, you know, the upholding of their image.
Yes.
So the monitoring system, I don't know which one is that. Can you just restate it?
Well, it's that of the upholding the image as part of the monitor asset. What monitoring systems are there in place to ensure that these contractors uphold the name of the company? That's how I put it.
Of the CIDB?
Yes.
Okay. It was responded to that.
Okay.
But we can just say it was responded to along the lines, this technical line. Let's
okay.
say the national home builders, whatever.
All right. Okay.
The ones that they register with them, they don't register with them. So that's why we're saying it doesn't help us.
Okay. I'm covered.
Because right. in the line that Dennis is talking, to say, yeah, housing, we... construction must be properly done, you see. And this technical separation by regulation, if that's the instrument, maybe it's fine. I know that maybe like you're saying that if you've got to get into that, you're going to be depleted in terms of funds. To us, it's much more a national interest matter, you see, to say that the public must be protected here from unscrupulous contractors, some registered either with you or with the housing council, whatever, NHBRC, and so on. So that's the one. We've got, you know, the Minister of Settlement of Housing, whatever now, the new name, Human Settlement. You see, it's inundated with poor workmanship, mm-hmm. incomplete housing, you name them, mm-hmm. you see. And those people are gone. They've gone to, I nearly used my French, somewhere else. You see, they're going to continue somewhere else, and so on and so on. So we can't have this situation. We've got to have a way that says these are the rules of the game. And in terms of shifting the blame, we've got to have a government system that integrates some sort of accountability. I think that's a major political matter that we're raising. Not trying to, you know, expect too much from you, but also not trying to say that you must be disengaged on this national interest matter. But you may respond to the matters raised by my colleagues.
I think he said he was covered. The honourable yes. member said he was covered. So.
Okay. And the no, the bond. I've seen the Borokaila. Let's take Bob Madlala. Mama Madlala, sorry.
I just wanted to close this.
I'll give you a bite. Let's continue. First. Otherwise, you know, you have the poems of exigency, say vala, say vula, say follow up, and so on and so on. Ariem, I'll come back to you.
Thanks,
you can still come back to it.
Thanks, Jefferson. Jefferson, some of my questions are clarified by the department, but then I want to know when. That when they're saying that in their budget the high percentage of the income is from registering of the contractors now. If they can explain, I'm not sure because I'm not vested really, how much do they cost each register to register, and do they differ according to their skills or what? If they can just explain to us how much each register cost, because I see that in their budget, the income, the percentage is high on the registration. My second question is on the CRS, when they're saying that the register is 3 years validity. Also, I'm not quite clear when they say 3 years validity, that how do they approve that now? See, this is 3 years validity. What mechanism, how do they monitor that now? This is 3 years validity. Also, on the challenges they are faced with is that they are having a strain on resources and systems. That is one of their challenges. If they can expatiate on us, but what strain really are they or resources are they faced with? Also on the memorandum of understanding that it's only with APSA and Standard Bank. Now what I would like to know is that, is this the only two institutions they have in the memorandum of understanding? Are there no any other institution they are having? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll respond to all the questions. The issue of, in terms of our budget, the figures that you see there in terms of registered income, that's the income that we collect from those that want to be registered. As we indicated, we have grades from 1 to 9. Grade 1, 2, 3, for instance, pay smaller amounts as fees to maintain their own register. The register is not designed to make profit, but it's designed to make sure that it can be maintained by the same people that should actually benefit from it as registered people. We don't campaign for membership as such. We give a license to trade, so they pay like you would have in a licensed driver's licensing department or traffic department, that you would actually pay in order for you to actually have a license. This money is actually used to assess contractors when they first register with us, when they apply. We assess them, and once they're captured on our system, they need to provide us with annual updates, except for grade one, of course, where we will reduce the fees from about 850 Rand to 450 for one class of works only. So it's actually the maintenance of the registers. So that income is actually supporting that. The higher the grade, the more they would be expected to pay. For instance, your grade 9, to maintain their annual information with us, they would actually pay to date 55,000 Rand, while grade 1 would not pay anything over the three-year period, because those are the entrance-level contractors. A grade 2 would be expected to pay a small amount of money, and it increases on a sliding scale. So both, in fact, the admin fee, which is actually the registration fee, would actually be about 200 Rand up to grade 2, and then from grade 3, it starts becoming 750 Rand up to grade 9. But it's the annual fees where they have to maintain their information, which they send to us through annual updates, where they actually get charged. We need to then interact with that information, capture it in the system, and therefore they actually pay for that. The strain on resources, when I was presenting, I was saying that we were expecting between 10,000 and 12,000 registered contractors on our system. We currently sit with more than 72,000, which then means we've got more than we were actually geared for. So the people that CIDP was expected to employ, we need to employ more than that in order to be able to service all the different people. If I may just explain specifically on this slide, we have registered income, we have transfer payments from the Department of Public Works. The transfer payment is very simple. For instance, we've negotiated with the department that they must give us two tranches during this financial year. So they've given us the first one, they'll give us the second one. It's easy to manage that one. But from the contractors, remember the contractors now have more than 100,000 registrations. So it's all these small accounts, and it's very easy to actually miss a payment or not maintain the account properly. So we have people that are actually managing groups of contractors' accounts. So it's a very delicate process, because the person may have paid 450 Rand, but we need to make sure that when we refund them, for instance, we refund them accordingly. If they come and apply for another class of works, we say you already have this one. The only difference that you must make, if it's at the same grade, is that you pay the annual fees that will have to be adjusted depending. Sorry, if it's the same grade, they actually don't have to have a additional fees, but only the admin fees. But if it's a higher grade, they need to make an adjustment on the annual fees only for the higher grade. The lower grade, they don't pay for. So it is actually that system. So it looks simple, but it's actually very complicated, because for each grade or each registration, this is more than 100,000 now. We need to account for that money. It may be 450 here, it may be 750 there, and then the bigger amount. The three-yearly validity period, that is in the Act. The Act says that contractors would be registered for a period of 3 years. 3 months before the end of their validity, or their validity period, they must apply to the CIDP to be reassessed as to whether they still deserve the same grade. There are many reasons why that could happen. So it's a maintenance program, a risk management kind of tool that is actually used all over the world. In South Africa, 3 years were actually chosen. It could be 4 years, it could be 2 years. In Malaysia, for instance, they're now registering every year, so they can actually manage that. They were established long before us, but they operate on a slightly different system. Within the CIDP, it's 3 years. The contractors that are asking, can you have a moratorium on this, for instance, that perhaps the chairperson may talk about later. It is in terms of the three-year period, but when they register with us, they know that their registration is valid for a period of 3 years. It's a maintenance program. We need to check if the people that we've given grades are still existing. Do they still want to operate in the industry? Do they meet the registration criteria? And the criteria is exactly the same as when they registered the first time. But we are reviewing that to make sure that we actually don't disadvantage contractors, especially those that are emerging. But it needs to be supported by a development program that deals with that. And we need to work in partnership with the government to do that.
Of course. You spend 9, 10 minutes on one question. Is that the trend in the others?
Okay. Well, the last one is the MOU. We sign MOUs with the banks as they get ready to actually support contractors. We negotiate with them upfront. We've done FNB. After that, Absa came on board, and Standard Bank, we negotiate with them. NetBank, we believe they're in the pipeline. We also have Itala Bank that we're working with. Nature, which has been supporting home builders, but is also participating on our programs. So when we sign the MOU, it's a formality to say we can then work together. But as to whether they can just give the money or they assess them, that becomes a bank's prerogative. But we try and improve their system for registered contractors only.
Thank you, sir. And Diabona Gutai, apart from more, you just continue. The passion that you display in this, just shows that if we don't stop you, you're not going to stop voluntarily. I have here Sis Nengwa, and then followed by Bob Kyle. Ms. Doris? Oh, thank you, Sir Person. Let me start by asking whether the 2,258 companies that were suspended, is it maybe because of that, or maybe you can give us further reasons why they were suspended? And out of you, in your presentation, you made mention of 84% of the companies that are owned by blacks. And then I would like to know how many in grade 9, 8, 7, and 6 are owned by blacks. Added to that is Gauteng province has got 89 companies in grade 9, and how many are owned by blacks? And then Western Cape, we've got 7 in grade 9, and then how many companies are owned by blacks? Because you said you were trying to empower the historically disadvantaged in your presentation and focusing mainly on the SMEs. The other question is about the construction contact centers. I don't know whether maybe is it the same centers as those who you had before. Those were sort of regional centers, like the one in KZN. But here, why I'm asking is because here you only mentioned Limpopo and Northwest. And then I think a few years ago you already had one in KwaZulu-Natal as requested by the Portfolio Committee. Because almost everybody was going to Pretoria to 4444 registration. And in your performance summary, you made mention of fraud and corruption by the in the office of the CEO. Just maybe if you can dwell much on that. How does it happen? Lastly,
in the Auditor General's report, you just mentioned that you do have the risk management systems and the internal controls, but there are quite a number. I do have them, quite a number of not irregularities, but some to create intangible assets understated and all that. I've got a list of it. But and one I would like to emphasize on is the irregular expenditure of 357,947 rand. And lastly, just to give us as to roughly what happened. Lastly, there is the construction charter and its role. I think it belongs to you as the entity. And if I remember, it was supposed to be presented to the portfolio committee. I don't think it ever happened. I do think it's your responsibility, because it must play the of the role it must play in the construction industry about the regulating the regulation thereof. That is it so far. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Member, I'll start with the first one. I think the figure of 2,000 plus suspended contractors, I just needed to get context on that. We have suspended registrations and construction companies based on the fact that they may have been required, for instance, last week, to have submitted a valid tax clearance certificate. So the system automatically suspends them, but they're not deregistered. They are suspended. When they submit the tax clearance certificate, it gets captured and they're on the system again. If they are supposed to have submitted financials or annual updates, again, they'll get temporarily suspended when they submit the information. We send them reminders, and then they send the information, they get into the system again. So it's a daily update that happens in terms of that. 84% black-owned construction companies, since the CRDB register was established, and what I'm reflecting now is the stats based on this month. What I was showing you before was based on September. It shows that there have been more than 5,000 upgrades on the register, and 84% of those are actually black-owned. We monitor the statistics because as they come to us to upgrade, we will capture that information and add it to the stats. There are various reasons why this would happen. Another contractor would apply for a grade 7 on the basis of their documents not qualify for a grade 7. We don't turn people away, so we'll capture them at the grade where the documents actually provide for. But when they submit the right documents, then they get elevated. So it's all those, plus those that may have completed projects, and then they improve. I would like to just scroll through these stats here, similar to what we've seen before. And then there's this one, actual number of contractors, similar to the one that we've seen. It was showing 72,000. This one has increased a bit. Black-owned by grade only. This one shows that in total, 95% of construction companies are actually black-owned. And the definition of black-owned here would actually be more than 50% black-owned, so majority black-owned. And you can see grade ones, well, almost 100%, and the number begins to decrease, especially from grade 7. You begin to have smaller numbers. But it's actually grade 9 where there's a concern. A lot of grade 9s are actually not owned strictly by either black or white people because their shares are publicly traded. I could go in and buy shares. After 3 months, I sell them. Another person comes and buys. Sometimes you won't even know if it's a black person or a white person that has bought them. But grade 7, well, let's say 6, 7, and 8, you may still have a one-person owner, which is actually a risk. We try and teach contractors to change their business model as they grow, because you can imagine one owner having a serious project at grade 8. The owner passes away. Nobody can manage the project anymore. Government must go out on tender again, and the family doesn't benefit anything. But if you actually have a multitude of owners, one person dying does not mean the company dies. Government doesn't have to go out on tender again. So these are the things that we try and tell contractors to start doing but it actually gives a sense of pride for specifically a black contractor who says, I started small, now I'm this big, and, you know, they feel proud about that, but there are risks around that. So in terms of specifically how many are black-owned, this slide actually talks to that. You don't have this slide. What I can do is I can actually copy it on a memory stick and transfer it so that the honorable members have access to that information. What we did with the NCOP select committee is that we promised that we can actually send these steps, but they are available on a monthly basis, so that you can look at them and see what you can do. The interesting thing about these slides is that you can see women owned by grading. You can also see women owned in specialist areas, and we indicate where clients can actually develop more women in a particular area, can develop women from grade 4 going up to grade 9 because there's an opportunity for them to get work. Again, it's not something that we dictate, but clients can actually do that. In terms of the triple C's, the triple C's that we've established started a few years ago. We launched the first one in KZN in 2007. We've been building on that, so it's one triple C per province. But if the Department of Public Works, whatever it's called now, feels that they need more offices, they actually have to use their own offices, and their staff will train them. The three that were launched in the last financial year, Bloemfontein, Mpumalanga, and Northern Cape, it's because they were ready. We are left with two now. That will then complete nine. So it's all of them put together that we're talking about. Fraud and corruption. We have a forensics organization that is helping us with fraud and corruption. They investigate our staff. They investigate contractors that are involved in fraud and corruption. We discipline these people. We take decisions. We publish in the government gazette those that have been successfully prosecuted. So we do that all the time. And we also post them on our website. We started also indicating who had committed fraud in the commercial press. The AG's report, perhaps the CFO will talk about that. The construction charter is actually owned by the Department of Public Works. The gazetting was done by the Department of Public Works. We've played a critical role. We actually assisted in funding the third-party review that has led to this specific gazetting of Section 9 code. So the CRDP has played a critical role. We're part of the steering committee within the charter group that makes sure that it is rolled forward. What we will be doing, and that's what we're busy preparing now, is that we'll reflect the scores, the scores of each construction company on our website with a disclaimer that we did not assess them because they are assessed by other consultants. But we'll reflect that so that whoever wants to employ them for government projects must know they are at this grade with respect to CRDP systems, but in terms of their BE scores, it's available there. Otherwise, they'll have to come to CRDP for the CRDP grade and then go elsewhere for the score. We'll actually put that on our screen. May I allow the CFO to deal with the
question? Yeah. Thank you. With regard to the regular expenditure, if you go to the annual report, I think it's page 99, note number 15.2, this relates to leases that we entered into. National Treasury issued a practice note number 5 of 2006 and 2007, and the practice note says that you could enter into either an operating lease or a finance lease. However, if you enter into a finance lease relating to, you know, your photocopiers, you know, operational machines and all that, you cannot exceed a contract of 3 years. However, in this case, we entered into a three-year contract, or a contract that actually exceeds the 3 years. And what we've done subsequently is to apply for condonation from National Treasury with regard to that lease contract that we entered into. Okay.
Is it all? What about the 365? Are you responding to that? The irregular expenditure. Yes, is that the one you're responding to?
That's the one.
Yes. Oh, I thought you were just talking to the broader question of risk management, internal controls, if those are intact and things like those. No, is it not a general question?
if I may respond, when he quoted page 99, he was actually responding to the particular item. It has a figure of the irregular expenditure.
All right. Yeah. Now, the general question of internal controls, risk management, is that something that you're comfortable with?
Honorable Chair, I will speak on behalf of the board, which oversees the activity of the CRDB. The board was distressed at the qualification, and the board then requested, because the qualification came as a surprise. You know, in the course of the year, you tend to probe and ask questions around financial management, and we followed up, and we had, as a board, we felt that things were going well. We had an audit committee that reported to the board periodically and reported that things were going well. And then we had the qualified audit, so the board was taken by surprise. But that said, the board has now mandated the CEO's office, and we've had the report back to say that, yes, the issues that gave rise to the qualification can be sorted in the next few months. So the board is fairly confident that these matters will be dealt with, and that the accounts will be sorted, and that we will not be heading for another qualification next year. So we've sought that assurance, and also we've understood where there are gaps, personnel gaps in the CFO's office, and we've been assured that the personnel gap will be plugged, and that, you know, the audit committee has been alerted. Well, they are now aware of the problem, so we know that we feel fairly confident here that the issue will be addressed in a short while.
No, thanks for that assurance. Can you record that assurance? These gentlemen, unless they bring a lady with them next time, will have to be here next year to come and just confirm the assurance they gave us. We are 6 months down the line now. You see, the AG has raised a variety of issues coming the previous time, that, and so on, overstating this, understating this, you know, and so on and so on. Let's not be too creative, CFO. You see, let's state the facts as they are so that we correct them properly. You see, I'm deliberately not getting into the details and asking you specific questions, but to say in general, let's give you the benefit of the doubt to say that you're on top of the situation and so on. I don't want you to come here next year with your heads down and so on. You must come here and celebrate a clean audit with the portfolio committee so that we can look into other strategic matters that matter. Babu Kyle, I haven't forgotten about you, you see. That Masango, you'll follow after the response.
Yeah, Mahmoud Doris has covered me on most of these questions. But what I wanted to say, Chairperson, is that we as a committee, we need to take this further about having two bodies registering contractors, because that's where our problem is. So basically, I think it is us as a community that needs to take that further. Then, CEO, most of your contractors are in grade one, and the amount of tenders grade one that they can access in grade one are about 300,000, 400,000 somewhere. Now, do you believe, because most government departments, these contractors get work from government departments, they issue tenders of 500,000 to 600,000, do you believe that these contractors will ever get out of those grade ones? I think you just need to explain that to you. Think, believe they would they ever get out of grade one? Secondly, some of the contractors remain in the grades that they are, all because of some departments pay them late, very late for that matter. What are you as CITP doing to assist those contractors? Because it affects them. Then your MOUs with the banks. You'd find that with most of these banks, which is quite true, especially with black contractors, is that when they deal with established contractors, they'll charge them prime minus. But when they deal with black contractors, it's prime plus. Is there any assistance that you can, that you do give to these contractors? Then, your engagement with stakeholders, yes, I believe you do. You could have one on the 23rd, but do you go down to provinces? Because basically, if you meet with the stakeholders there, many of them are disgruntled. And if you don't, do you, in the near future, have plans to go visit the stakeholders down at the provincial level? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Babu Kail. Have you given up on the follow-up you wanted to make on that matter that we closed?
No, it's closed. I said we must discuss it as a committee.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Jane. Thanks for joining us. I was going to give you a bite, but you're running away too quickly. All right. No, that's fine. So just give a warning that this two bodies registering contractors we must deal with at some point.
Yes, as a committee.
As a committee. No, that's fine. That point is taken.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. Yes, the issue of grade ones going up to the limit of 200,000 rand as a cap, we are actually planning to increase the upper limit for grade one to 500,000. But it's not only grade one that will be affected. Remember that after the big change that we've just done, grade two goes up to 650,000. So when we improve grade one to 500,000, we need to make an adjustment on grade two as well. That is actually on the card because we can see that there are no projects. Actually, when we pleaded with National Treasury to improve the threshold, it wasn't done at that time. And when it was done, then we said we would actually link up with it. Late payment delays. The CREB between 2007 and 2008 early conducted a study to see what the context is of these late payments. We are now engaging with the provinces. What you find between Public Works, which would be an implementing agent, and the Department of Education, which would be the client department, you find that there's a problem. Who holds the budget? When do they transfer it? The mechanism of transfer. We found a lot of information from various departments, and we are actually pleading with departments to do this. But maybe pleasing to indicate that MBSA, Master Builders Association, Master Builders South Africa, has also conducted a subsequent study recently, and the minister has actually pronounced on that and supports the fact that we need to come up with an intervention. The minister committed to actually dealing with it from his office, making sure that it makes impact. So it's a matter that we do take seriously. The MOUs with the banks, I think at this stage it would be difficult for CREP to dictate to the banks as to how they must do it. But in our engagements, there's a meeting coming up with APSA, for instance, where we are going to be discussing what problems the banks actually experience, because they do experience problems with people assuming now that they are registered with CREP. CREP has an MOU with the bank. They can just go to the bank and get money. I think if you look at how the banks actually apply this, they will actually favor those that are reliable in terms of paying back the money. We need to just deal with the banks and say, if there's a guarantee that this person has got a project with a government department, and make sure that the government department actually pays. Because sometimes they go and borrow money. It's expensive to do it on the proviso that the project is there, but government doesn't pay in time. They end up actually losing all their profit. So we need to make sure that as they go and borrow money, they will actually improve their own situation, end up getting the P minus, prime minus rate, because they pay at the time that they promise. But it's a matter that we're discussing with the banks now that we have MOUs with them. In terms of stakeholders, the stakeholder forum meeting is legislated. It must happen at least once a year, with stakeholder forum membership running for 2 years. but we interact with stakeholders all the time. There's a procurement focus group, people who are responsible for procurement in departments. We meet with them. We go to every province, actually. We couldn't do it last year after I had announced that we're going to do it, and then the budget shortfall that we had to manage so that we're not in the red. But either before the stakeholder forum meeting or after the stakeholder forum meeting, we do engage. We go to each province to meet with people. We might not go to each and every rural area, but we actually coordinate it in such a way that all the stakeholders actually go to that particular province. It's only last year that we did not do it that way, but we interacted with stakeholders in different ways. We had what was exciting, the Women in Construction Awards that we conducted for the first time in provinces this year, but we started with the national event last year. We used that as a platform again. As we rewarded women in construction, we used that platform to actually indicate what challenges we're facing as the industry. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I sense that there is a firm proposal that you must start developing, budget constraints permitting, some provincial roadshows to deal with stakeholders at that level. I think that is what I sense to be a proposal. Thank you very much, Baruma-san.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Even my questions are now slim, because most of the questions have been asked. Chairperson, you know, being new in this portfolio.
There is nothing wrong with saying
not on that entirely.
Okay.
Chairperson, I just want to get the clarity on, because it's not certain, maybe someone wants to understand more about it. This grading, who decides or what criteria do they tell them 1 to 9? Why not 1 to 4 or 5? This is something that I don't know. I just want to get an understanding. And maybe tell us the criteria. Why do you say a guy is 3 and not that guy is at 7? Or what are those things that are so thin that they look at and say, yeah, now you can be on this one? But the other thing that I'm not safe about is that 3 years, you register and then you have to stay for 3 years. If that's the case, you have to wait for 3 years to be upgraded. If that's not the case, then it's better. But the way I had it, it will be really difficult for people to can go up. But I'm just asking some questions again. I'm a guy owning a construction. What is it in for me? What are the benefits for me for joining or for registering with the CIGB? Do they really make sure that all these departments, they cannot employ me as long as I'm not registered with CIGB? Is that the case? And if it's the case, who looks at, I'm grade 1, I can't get this job. I can only get this job because I'm at this level. So that's something we need to know, whether who takes those decisions and say, no, you are grade 1, you can't get that job because this job is for 300,000. The other one that they spoke about, Chairperson, is that they are actually development of contractors. And the way the CEO said, they started in Limpopo. I mean, if you develop people, then we should have seen Limpopo being the most being that with the grading, they have moved up. But I look at Limpopo where they started, actually the grading is more poor than the others that were, they didn't start there. Why didn't they develop the contractors in Limpopo so that they moved to the upper grading? And then there's a procurement reform. You know, sometimes we have a difficult people get tenders, and they have to run around. Because the tender is not the friendly user. They have to get consultants to fill in the forms. Do we make these forms for a friendly user so that, you know, an ordinary person can fill them and send them to the tender board without going and paying a consultant or someone more, you know, more educated to fill them the forms? The last one, last week Friday, we had a CDE, and I look at at one of their area of looking is quality, health and safety, and environment. I just want to find out, is it not a duplication of, because CBE told us they are looking at the environment, the health and safety of the community, and they are also looking at that. Is this not a duplication of both the two institutions doing the same job? The last one, 2010. They say they supported the 2010, but because last year there was no activity, I just want to find out what support do they give to 2010, because everybody is talking about 2010, but we don't know whether people are there or not there. Thank you, Chief.
Chief. Before you go on, Baba Magama, be ready for your first and last bite. And anybody else after this must indicate if they still want to say something, because after that die, we must allow our guests to go home. All right, Doc. Correct.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. I'll go through them as they were listed. Who decides on the criteria? CRDB actually decides on the criteria, but the criteria is public knowledge. We use two capabilities as part of the criteria, financial capability, and here it doesn't mean if the contractor doesn't have money, as long as they have access to money to kickstart the project, because without that, they won't be able to start. Second one is works capability, which means if a contractor has competence in civil engineering, they will actually get projects that are related to that. If they are, have expertise in electrical engineering, they must actually get projects that are related to that. So we use, for instance, for grade ones, basically there are no barriers. But grades 2 to 4, we begin to be strict. We ask for the contractor's turnover, for instance, how much money have they made. In other words, to see if they could actually be looked at favorably by the banks or the sponsorships. Sponsorship is a very important tool, again, because we, as I said, do not ask for the contractor's money as such. But if they are able to actually leverage their business to actually get the kind of money that would assist them to kickstart the project until they get paid with their first invoice. So we have criteria for grades, let me emphasize grades 2 to 9, that are actually at different levels. For your higher grades, it's actually stricter. For lower grades, it's actually with less barriers. But the role that is played by CRDB is to actually give the contractor a trading license. It's actually the client who will say, we want to build a bridge. This bridge is valued. Their quantity surveyors will actually determine how much it would actually cost. If it's going to cost 250 million rand, they then ask for CIDB grade 9, for instance. But they could say, we will also take a grade 8 with a PE status, potentially emerging status, which comes from historically disadvantaged individuals, to do the same project, provided they can support them. So they base it on the tender value ranges. That's why from grade 1 to 9, you have different upper limits, except for grade 9, of course. So they use that to actually say, for this level, we'll actually take this from this grade and up. So those that have that particular grade, and they can do work from that grade and down. So that's how flexible it is. Upgrading does not happen only after 3 years. Upgrading takes place every day. We handle applications all the time. But with the 3-yearly renewal, when contractors apply to be reassessed, they may find that on the basis of the project that they've done, they actually qualify for a higher grade. They might not know when they apply. They just apply to be reassessed. CRDB will then advise them and tell them, you actually qualify for a higher grade. Would you like to take up that offer and make an adjustment on your fees, or do you want to stay at the same level? Some contractors say, no, I don't want to go up because I don't have the expertise to actually go into complicated projects. I want to stay where I have been, because if they agree to go up, they must pay. So they don't have to wait for 3 years. They can apply any time for that. It's just that it's one of the outcomes of the 3-yearly assessment. Others maintain their grade in 3 years. Others then cannot maintain because they don't meet the criteria, and they would end up with a downgrading. What are the benefits? The benefits are that, like it happens with doctors, like it happens with social workers, if you want to regulate an industry, you need to know who is there and how much they can actually do. So if they are not, the Act actually spells it out clearly that any contractor who wants to participate in a public tendering system to build clinics, roads, et cetera, must actually be registered with the CRDB and must have been assessed to have a particular grade. So we've done the basic work for clients. When the clients come in, they can issue a tender. Within a short period of time, they could actually appoint a contractor that is suitable for that project. In the past, it would take a long time because they would do some of the work that CRDB would have done. There are many benefits that should come going forward. For instance, some clients have said, we ask for a tax clearance certificate when we ask them to tender. You also ask for a tax clearance certificate when you ask them to register. Perhaps in future, we should look at not asking for a tax clearance certificate during the tendering stage, because they've already provided it to the CRDB, unless they have not provided it. So those are the benefits that going forward, we should actually get. But it's basically, in a nutshell, a license to trade. And they must have been assessed that they can do the work, because if you start when they are tendering and you have 200 that they have responded, it would actually be a challenge. Limpopo was the first one where this was piloted, but the intention was not to go to Limpopo and develop contractors. It was the rollout, sorry, the piloting of the CIDB requirement, standard for uniformity, that when they structure the tender document, the client must actually structure it in such a way that it is actually simpler. If you look at the old documents, tender documents, you'd find that ESCOM had its own, Public Works Limpopo had its own. Now we've actually aligned them so that it's easy for contractors to know, this is where you start, this is where I fill in my name, this is where I fill in this. So we've actually simplified it. It's actually very simple. We've also gone further to say, let's have a simplified set of forms of contract. For instance, when it comes to a particular contract, the client will say, we choose this form of contract, be it the GCC, be it the NEC. They will then say why they are doing that, so that the contractors know which form of contract is being used. They don't have to run to the lawyers each time. They can basically complete these things themselves. So we have actually simplified the tender the structure of the tender document. If you visit our website and you look at the iTender, it actually prompts them to complete specific fields to make sure that it's actually simplified. And I believe in that way we're actually saving a lot of contractors from running to the lawyers to assist them to do this. Unfortunately, when they need to estimate their quantities, if they can't do it themselves, they'll need to go to a quantity surveyor to help them. It's just unfortunate. And we've had a number of contractors that say, I tendered for this project, my profit is gone before I've completed the project, because there's nobody who can actually estimate that you need so much in terms of this construction material. So it's just unfortunate that people must estimate how much it's going to cost them to buy material, and therefore they must tender on the basis of their own circumstances. Well, I think that deals with the forms to fill that have been simplified, actually. CBE, yes, CBE deals with the council, well, with six member councils and the professionals on an individual basis. We will, in future, have a register of professional service providers, but as companies, not as individuals. They have their specific roles to deal with the professionals. CRDB deals with the physical asset that is going to be constructed and how contractors must deal with it. But there are areas of overlap, and we do work together on that. We attend the same meetings to deal with the same issues. Where they feel that they must talk more to their members as professionals, CRDB would not necessarily be doing that, but we'll be talking to the construction industry as such. 2010, we supported 2010 in terms of procurement advice. We believe that it would have taken long to deliver the 2010 stadia if the CRDB was not established by that time. Remember that the host cities were not familiar with the requirements of the CRDB at the time, so we got in to advise them on how it should be done, how to estimate who can actually do the project on the basis of the grade. But we then stepped out because we did not want to create conflict of interest between the client and the contractors, because either of them would come to us when the procurement regime has actually been breached. So we provided procurement advice. The last time we provided a report requested by EXCO of the LOC, we provided that report. We were expected to come and do a presentation to them about the state of the stadia in South Africa. We provided the report that was very comprehensive, and I feel that they did not see the need to actually go ahead with it because they actually got the information that they wanted. We worked with National Treasury as well as the Department of Sports to actually do that. But our involvement was procurement advice, which is what we should do, and then we stepped out of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure how you responded to this perceived duplication of roles. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Member, the role of health and safety is not the responsibility of one party in the construction. It's the responsibility of everyone who is involved in the construction sector. So while the CBE looks at the issue from the point of view of the professionals, we look at it from the point of view of the entire industry, including the professionals. So correctly, there's a bit of overlap, but our emphasis is more on the contracting side and the client side as well. So it's a necessary overlap of, you know, I think the overlap has to be there. Otherwise, we would create a gap, and it's a very serious issue as well.
No, no, thank you. That one, I'm sure it's a matter that the member also understands. It just wanted to check your response, I suppose. That health and safety is a national competency for everybody. And the safety of this nation must be paramount to our priority, all of us, wherever we are, whether we're in the plane or train or bus or stadium. We don't want to see things collapsing on us. And we want our guests to come here for the 2010 soccer tournament and be happy and satisfied that they are built up to standard and scratch. And Dr. Maga.
Without a coach, Jefferson.
No, I've not said anything about the coach. No, you didn't raise your hand. I'm just
no, thanks, Chief.
Making sure that you're part of this meeting.
No, I am indeed.
November, you must follow.
No, Chief.
Okay, I'll take a straight line. Dennis, I'm going to end up with you.
Chair, I'll just raise two, three issues, which I am certain have been raised earlier. But the entity, amongst other things, you know, did not submit their strategic plan in time. There are no clear functional lines of responsibility. About some of, or just two of the issues that were raised by the Auditor General. And these issues were raised in the previous audit findings, or the audit findings of the Auditor General. Now, the entity sits here and says to us, no, but look, this time around we'll bring you a clean audit. It's unacceptable. And I think I just want to emphasize. Because you see, for instance, to me, what is I'm saying this on the basis of assumption that during this financial year, a number of the employees of CIDB will receive or have received performance bonuses on the basis of such a bad audit report, which in fact says their performance appraisal cannot even be verified. So when indeed they pay out those bonuses, on the basis of what? You see. Now I'm saying these are serious issues, okay, that will really require their commitment, their absolute dedication, so that we do not end up next year here. We'll be, in fact, this is a new parliament. So we'll find the same people here. And I'm sure the chairperson will not be so friendly the next time when we deal with these issues, and of course the other members of the committee. Now I think on this I can speak on behalf of all political parties when I say so. So I'm just trying to share that. I'm just trying to impress on the gentlemen, of course, to the exclusion of ladies, that this is a serious matter. We are the representatives of the people here. We are not here to appease them. So we'll grind them if these things are not corrected.
Thank you very much. The warning is duly given. You see, the disadvantage or the other unintended consequences are that come next day, if our guests see that things are not going to work out for them, they just tender resignations and don't come here. We implore you not to resign between now and then. We are going to call you, you see, to say come and defend the positions you have taken previously, to say clean orders are coming. All right. Thanks, Magam. I knew that there was something burning when you were just sitting and being quiet. I wanted to get it out. Babukaila, if there's anything, that's your last chance. You take an overall response, if any.
Yeah. Yes, no, I just advise to CIDP, when I say that they must go to the stakeholders at the provinces.
Babukaila, you're using your bedroom voice.
The truth of the matter is that some of the requirements are not affecting our disadvantaged contractors. For instance, one of your requirements is
they must be in good standing financially if they want to go to higher grades. And most of these disadvantaged contractors are being assisted either by development bodies or whichever, because unfortunately, because of not of their own making, they don't have those financial resources. It is something that you need to look at. And another of your requirements is that you need previous projects that they have done, and you're looking at back at 3 years. But some of them have done, in the last 4 years, they've done major projects. And because of not of their making, there are too many contractors there, and unfortunately most of the work goes to the established companies. So it is, you need to look at those, and when you deal with our people, some flexibility is needed, because you cannot all of a sudden expect them to be established contractors. So I think you need to sit down and look at those, because people down there are frustrated. That's why I say go down to those people and you'll hear their concerns. Thank you.
Yes, Captain, I think there are one question of mine that was not answered as well, if I can remember. I've asked whether all government departments, do they make sure that they make use of contractors registered with the IDB? And if, who decides that this one we're going to give him a job of grade one because the money is so much?
Mr. November.
Chairperson, thank you. As you have said, there's nothing wrong than to say I'm covered. But my worry was on page 74, 75, and 76. And it's the same worry that Honorable Magama have raised, and also Mom Doris. It's really a worrying factor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sure they've noted the pages and the contents and issues. Comrade Madlana.
I'm covered.
Covered. Stories.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not really covered, but I am partly covered. Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. The CEO of CIDB said that, actually when I asked about the black-owned, he said that if the company has got more than 50% blacks, you assume that it's a black-owned company, or you put it under black-owned companies. Now, my worry is, of course, you don't dish out the contractors, the contracts. I mean, if in some cases it's just a fronting problem that we will always have, that you have more blacks and yet sometimes they know nothing. I mean, we've experienced that when you go around the provinces. You find that it's a white-owned company, and it's only the blacks that know nothing about construction, and it falls under black contractors. That's my. Are you able to detect, or is it just one of those things that is the water under the bridge? Okay. Secondly, I don't know if maybe you could assist me on this one. You know, I mean, we get a lot of experience when we go around the doing oversight in provinces. Say, for instance, we went to Gauteng. three big projects, were given to grade 9 contractors. We went to Soweto. It was a 300 million hospital given to one contractor. And out of those, when we tried to ask how many blacks subcontractors do you have, we were told that this is too technical. We can't have the black contractors. I mean, it was just like that. I mean, there was no two way about it. The government has paid 300 million. And then we were told that, we can't employ blacks because they are not up to the standard of building this. And then from there we went to to what do they call it now? I mean, the other hospital that is in Soweto, Chris Anipur, Parakwanath Hospital. And that also it was worth more than 300 million. It was about 350 million because it was upgraded at that time. Even then, we were told that no black contractors, it's only those white, affluent contractors that know all the technicalities of I mean, there's no way the government can pay so much money to already empowered contractors. That's why I'm saying it's not on you, but it's a concern. It's a concern that we need to raise as the members of parliament, because it doesn't go down nicely. But I was just wondering if there's anything that you can do to assist on that one. Thanks.
Honorable Whoop, you're starting to whoop us into line properly now as well. Bogutin, Dadekika, if there's anything you want to say it now on that.
He said you should say Praten, because you make him feel very old if you say Babutin.
I never said Babutin, you're saying it. Praten. You covered. Thank you very much. No, I think I'm going to give our guest CIDB to just make their closing comments before we close the meeting. But you see, let's put the private sector aside for now. Your government puts an infrastructure investment of billions, 787 billion rand, into the economy, particularly for the construction industry to continue the booming under this recession. But we've got a responsibility as well to ask who are the beneficiaries of this. You see? It can't be a situation where the cream is given to the grade 9 contractors, for instance, with no women. You've shown that no women there. We've got legislation here, employment equity, that talks about, I don't know what is the compliance, we'll have to check that as well, with all these contractors. And also just to say, how do we ensure that our people benefit from this government investment? You see, it can't be left to just technicalities and formalities. It's a matter that needs us to both stand up and say it's important that our people benefit in terms of this, in terms of not just the money, but the growth, the expertise, the training, and so on and so on. So there must be some mechanism built into this process to deal with that matter. The question of grade 9s, as you say, you see, others have got the upper limit. They've got endless, unlimited. They can go for any billions and millions of things as and when they want. But the profile of those contractors is important to engage. I mean, some of them are public companies and so on and so on. We won't know in terms of the market, but we know what happens in the stock exchange, for instance. We've got a greater appreciation of the profile of blacks in there. So I'm just raising a matter that says we'll have to engage this matter further to say how do we ensure that we don't just... Because there is definitely gatekeeping happening at many levels in terms of entry into these contractors. We've raised just one of them, barrier to entry in terms of just the qualification. A black child having to go through primary school, mathematics, science, and all those, you know the difficulties getting into historically black universities, for instance, and so on. Some of them don't have the necessary, accreditation and things like those. People get stranded. Even those who get through those don't get experiential training, the apprenticeship that we're talking about and so on, because it's still voluntary, the issues. I don't want to lament the point, but I'm just saying it's important that this matter be engaged at a much more strategic level. As you see, we might have to revisit the question of the charter, to see in terms of how far are we in terms of complying implementation and so on. Just in terms of presentation, the department is with us, I think, in the coming week or so. It might be that we tell them in advance to give a report on this matter as well. If we can just note it, my sister here, so that we deal with that. Okay, there are matters that we said we are going to deal with, Brother Kyla, that you've raised about the exemptions and things. As the process, it's a matter that we need a bit of activism here. And it might be just worth our, you know, worth giving us some sort of criteria you're using for grading. You see, because you're telling us about financial capabilities, which opens up scope, not just capacity, but capability. But the Kyla seem to be saying that, you see, you've got to comply with. It might be, I don't know whether the regimen that you, unless you have been having and the practice, are the same. We might just have to close that information gap by giving us the necessary information around that. So I just thought I must raise these issues alongside with the issues of that we have to deal with ourselves, of fronting when we look into this profiling of the issues and so on, because it's important to build a credible representative construction industry. That we must do. And it shouldn't take us more than 5 years to do that, I think. For now, we've taken, when now, how old are you now? 8 years? 7 years? I know that it's an establishment process where baptizing, but now you're more than 5 years old now. At least you can walk on your own, you know, and so on, and do what the 5-year-old are doing. You can start swearing as well. Mm-hmm. So don't just be too nice to people if they do the wrong thing. Thank you. You can just respond as in closing.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll just highlight areas where I think we would like to give you comfort that we are actually taking the matters that were raised by the Auditor General, the matters that are raised by stakeholders, very seriously. In terms of the strike plan, for the first time by end of September, we have actually submitted the strike plan. The first one that was prepared early this year, working with the department, because in the past we had not submitted strike plan, so we're already doing that. We also submitted a materiality framework. You will actually see it recorded in future. And all the time when we submit our business plan and strike plan, we'll have our materiality framework. In terms of no clear lines of responsibilities, that has already been fixed. It actually affects the department that the CFO actually deals with. And it was a matter where it was expected that he would actually sign all you know, certain responsibilities which were actually signed for by people in his department, depending on the level and the amounts involved. We need to actually go to the provinces to discuss with the stakeholders there, and we're committing ourselves after the stakeholder forum that we'll actually do that. We'll take some of the discussion points that will have come from the stakeholder forum, but we do interact with people in the provinces anyway. Stakeholder forum membership is actually constituted by people nominated by different sectors, and we then recognize them. I would like to touch a bit on the point that came from Honorable Member Masango in terms of who actually decides who gets what project. I'll expand a bit and then I'll allow the chairperson to actually fill that one as well. The CRDB has given guidelines on how to break up projects so that a project that would have been done by a higher grade can actually be done by a number of lower grades. It is actually the client that decides, in this case we want one contractor, in this case we can have more contractors. So we've given guidance through our practice notes on how to break up projects, not for the wrong reasons, where somebody breaks up a project in order to give the same individual in series a project that could have been given and service delivery could happen at the same time. We've also guided client departments on how to aggregate projects. In other words, from a number of small projects that have become very difficult to manage, that they must be able to say, we don't have capacity to actually manage all these little projects, we can group them. For instance, schools in a particular region could be built by a contractor, and you allow them to build one at a time, so you assist them in terms of development, but you're also saying you will give you a package so that you can then next time move to a higher grade. So we've provided all that information. It's up to the client departments to then say, in this particular case, we do it in another case, maybe we can't do it because of whatever constraint. We can actually share that information with you because it's just guidance. Remember that we're giving a license to trade, but the people that must actually implement, you know, contractor development are those that actually award projects. So that clear line of function needs to be recognized in that. But we're actually going out of our way to capacitate that line. The issue of fronting is very complicated. We would never know if there was fronting or not unless the contractors, fellow contractors, actually tell us because they know what is happening in the industry. But where CIDP actually asks for ownership, we actually prove through CIPRO, we have an organization that confirms this information for us when we register them. If, for instance, there are members, more than 50% black in an organization, it's very difficult for us to tell whether there's fronting or not because it's a very complicated in-company kind of thing. What we tell contractors is that they must be aware of their rights when they sign with another construction company and they subcontract. When they form joint ventures, they must be aware of that. But within a company, once people tell us, I'm the owner of this company, it's very difficult to tell, no, you don't know about this company. Somebody else is running it for you. But we rely on information that comes through. But fronting is a very serious matter, and I think we should actually develop another system of detecting fronting, not only the construction industry, but elsewhere as well. Within the construction industry, where we get information, we alert the client. The client will investigate, but CIDP can also investigate where it is within our means to be able to deal with it. That's why our budget for forensic investigation has actually gone so much higher, but it is something that we're doing. I think the issue about big projects that end up going to one contractor, for instance, as I said, we've actually guided clients into breaking up projects so that smaller contractors can deal with it. We'd like to, at some stage, if we come back, explain to you about this potentially emerging status of contractors, because we believe that it's a tool that has not really been used to a large extent. And I'm aware that client departments are scared of promising that they will give support to emerging contractors and fail along the way, and they'll actually be blamed. We are fully aware also of the 787 billion rand that must go to construction, and we wish that this was actually unpacked as soon as possible so that contractors can start planning as to what slice of the cake they can actually get. CIDP doesn't know at this stage, because I think the Planning Commission must actually say such a portion goes to these to municipalities, this portion goes to public works. Otherwise, it is beginning to create a lot of confusion, and they come to us and say, how much are we going to get? And we can't tell because we don't give projects. They go to the Department of Public Works, and this money doesn't belong to public works, all of it. They only have a slice of it. I think the sooner we get the breakdown of this money, the better will it be for especially emerging contractors to begin to gear themselves up for a slice of the cake. From my side, thanks.
Oh, these chefs are in a hurry for some slices. So they don't know yet what portion they can... Oh, they don't know.
Okay.
We just know the global figure, but we don't know how it breaks down to the portion. You remember that some of it
You meet with the minister today. You should be asking that first question.
Right.
They've got all that breakdown.
Okay. We know that some of it goes to Eskom's import of equipment as well. Chair, thank you very much for the audience we've had and the questions that have come through. We really appreciate the way you've engaged with us, because in the issues that you've raised, we've gained further insight into areas that we should emphasize in our deliberations. I need to make a comment and then round up the CIDB's presentation. On the issue of excluding black firms on major projects, this is something, and the feedback we received from the honorable member, it's really most unfortunate, because every construction activity, say a hospital would have a sophisticated component to it, say the equipment, say x-ray equipment, sorting that, installing that, and lining that with all the precision that it requires, that might require experience and also installation equipment. But it would also have the most basic activity, such as pouring the foundation, building the wall, the division wall,